friends, and welcome to episode 66 of Did You Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Today, I am joined by Kate Golly of Strong Body Green Planet. Kate is relentlessly focused on creating a healthy, happy, compassionate vegan world. She specializes in creating the mindset that makes your best eating and exercising choices simple and sustainable. Kate first got into fitness as a way to transform her body and confidence. She has spent 17 years helping thousands of individuals sculpt a body and life they love, and over the past 7 years has focused on vegan health coaching as one of the most powerful ways to advocate for the animals is to be fit, strong, and healthy. If you've been thinking about making a change in your life, whether as a New Year's resolution or simply because, well, it's now and you want to, this episode is a perfect way to kick that off. Kate shares tips that are actionable right now and motivates us to lead with love in all ways. She also has a killer hummus recommendation. Hey, Kate, thanks so much for joining me. Welcome.
Kimberly, it is my pleasure to be here with you.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. So let's get right into it. Tell me about your vegan journey.
Absolutely. So I was probably that typical animal-loving little girl who still ate animals. It took me a while to realize. And like so many people, I became vegetarian first. So there were probably a few seeds in that journey. I do remember a particular conversation with a girl at school when I was 16 and also passing trucks full of sheep on their way to slaughter where I grew up in New Zealand. And you could feel the fear and that something was wrong. However, I guess I didn't click until that one conversation with that one girl. And sadly, it would take me a further 23 years until I actually became vegan. And by that point in time, I'd been a personal trainer for about a decade. I followed a very high protein, low carbohydrate, vegetarian diet, and that was working for me. I worked in a gym bro gym where I was already the weirdo for being an ethical vegetarian. And at that point in time, about almost 8 years ago now, I watched Cowspiracy and I learned the truth. I learned that ethical vegetarians are a little bit of an oxymoron and animals were still dying for my food choices. And so, Kimberly, that's when I became vegan, basically overnight.
Wow. Okay. It's always really impressive when someone goes vegan overnight. I think it might be easier if you're already vegetarian first, but what an amazing thing for you. How old were you when you first went vegetarian? Because you were a kid, right?
Yeah, I was 16. You know, up until 16, I remember declaring I could never be vegetarian. I love the taste of meat. None of us give up eating animals because of the taste, I don't think. However, as I said, those seeds were planted. I made the transition and I would have been 39 when I became vegan.
Right. Yeah. You know, I was vegetarian for 14 years before I went vegan. I went vegetarian right before like my 21st birthday, a couple months before that. And I had grown up just like you, was the little girl who loved animals, but didn't think twice about eating them. And then like it slowly, these seeds were being planted. There was stuff happening where I was like, I'm going to stop using things that have been tested on animals. And then I was a vegetarian who, you know, I ate cheese and eggs, but I didn't wear leather. I didn't wear silk or wool. I had already made that connection, except about dairy and eggs. And it's so interesting how well the dairy industry and the egg industry has almost hidden that information for so long. Because I think I hear this a lot from people who were vegetarian for a long time. You can hear that they kind of were always destined to be vegan when they tell their story.
And there always seems to be this, like, where we didn't know. There wasn't that information just so readily available. But how awesome for you that you were just like, you learned that and you were like, okay, that's it. I'm vegan now. How well did that go over at your bro gym when you came in and you're like, guess what?
Good question. One of the trainers who, to his credit, is generally very science-based and such, and he said to me, his first comment when I told him was, well, goodbye lean muscle mass then. And I was a bit fearful too. I was at a point in time a decade in with my career and probably a couple of decades in with my love of the gym. I was happy with how my body was looking and working, and I thought I'd probably gain a bit of fat, I'd probably lose a bit of muscle and strength, and thankfully he was wrong and I was wrong, and I didn't lose any muscle or gain any fat. It was only all good, the results. And I think I checked back in with him a few years down the track when the vegan lifestyle was all going well, and his not so gracious response was something along the lines of, well, I think it's a lot easier for females, which is ridiculous because there are so many male vegan bodybuilders out mm-hmm. there proving him and all the other naysayers wrong.
Yeah. Oh. Well, hopefully somebody will start planting some seeds for him too. And who knows, maybe you were the first one.
Maybe.
That's the goal, right? We show up and we show people what's possible and hope that they come along for the ride.
Do you know, we're all going to move at our own pace, right? Mm-hmm. I wish I'd known the truth earlier. I wish Cowspiracy and everything else had been around when I was 16 or even earlier. However, I'm slowly learning that we can't shake people into realizing in our urgent time frame, we're all going to come to it in our own time frame.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. So important to be able to meet people where they are, and to be able to have conversations where they don't feel like you're forcing them, like, hey, get on this and do it already because you've done it already, you know? So I realized as I was saying that, I was letting out my kind of, I want the world to be vegan, but I know that it's a slow process.
I 100% agree, especially with the people that you love most. However, yes. I keep reminding myself, go with what is effective mm-hmm. rather than what your little animal rights activist heart might be telling you in the moment.
Yeah, that is such good advice. If we can settle our little animal rights activist heart and hear what they're saying, it can make us more effective in how we approach them, where they'll hear our message without being defensive too, because we're approaching them from what matters to them. So maybe the people at the bro gym want to hear about, you're still getting enough protein and here's how to maintain your lean muscle mass, where someone outside of that community, maybe you need to talk about how great the, you know, the non-leather shoe options are, or, you know, where you can get a good handbag. It's just so important to pay attention to those around us, right? And see where we can go with them.
I 100% agree.
So I want to talk about, while we're talking about the gym and exercise is such a significant piece of what you do. And we talked a little bit in our initial call about mindset and exercise. And I'd love to talk about that first, since we already started talking about the gym. You know, I know for sure that I am not as active as I'd like to be. And I know that my mental health is so much better when I'm moving my body, when I'm doing things that make me feel good, that get my heart rate up and just allow me to feel what my body is capable of. So I'd love to hear from your perspective, you know, just about exercise and mindset and kind of how you make that work with the people you work with.
Absolutely. One of my favorite things is to help people create the most effective mindset that makes their best eating and exercising choices simple and sustainable. And the first point there for a lot of people just want to know the best foods, the best exercise to get results, and that's important. However, prior to that, it's about laying the foundation for your future success. And a really important way to do that is to first define what you're looking to achieve, your goal, and add a lot of emotional intensity to that and to the way that your life is going to look when you achieve that. And there's nothing new there. However, what I also really like to do is to define your most important values and beliefs. Mm. So those values are those states that you seek out before anything else. It might be freedom or love or compassion, integrity, whatever it is for you, it's where you spend your time and perhaps also your money. And the key thing here is to then align achieving that goal that you defined with your ideal values and beliefs. So, for example, if freedom is a number one value for me, which it is for a lot of people, then if I see rocking around in a fit, strong, healthy body as freedom, as allowing me to do everything that I want to do with health and vitality, then taking the actions that let me achieve that goal will be a lot easier to take. In contrast, this is how it might not work. For example, this is something that we might need to work on. I might need to work on with a client. If someone has a number one goal of family, and they see taking the actions in the gym as in conflict with the time that they want to spend with their family, they're going to find that getting to the gym at stupid o'clock in the morning might not be such a priority, or perhaps moving away from exercise, eating those plant-based meals that their husband doesn't love, that might be in conflict. However, if they were to dig deep and they were to see that being fit and strong and healthy and living a long time and being able to play with your kids or grandkids for as long as you want, as many years as you want, if they were to see how that was in support, that was congruent with achieving their goal, that value and that goal were all perfectly aligned, that basically eliminates the decision-making process. Yeah. You don't get up and think, do I or don't I exercise? Do I or don't I make those whole food plant-based meals? You just think, this is aligned with the person I want to be and the way that I want to live my life. And so I'd say that's probably the most impactful foundation that I'd love to help people build so far as working towards a specific goal.
Yeah. I love that. And it makes me think about how we can even compare it to veganism, right? Because what you're doing is you're showing them outside of themselves, something bigger than just, I want to lose weight, I want to look hot in this outfit, or, you know, these things that are just about them. When you look at the ability to have that feeling of freedom, being able to move in a body that doesn't restrict you in any way, you can do what you want, or to be able to live long and be healthy and see your family grow and change, and be there for all of those moments. It's just like veganism, right? Where we're not focused on ourselves. We're focused on the animals, on making this change in the world. And man, if that isn't powerful.
Absolutely. I think one of the most effective ways to advocate for the animals is to be fit, strong, and healthy. And I will say, whatever gets you taking the right action, if someone's in it to lose those last few vanity kilos and that gets them into it, absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever is compelling to you as an individual, I'm down with. And I'm sure, as you've seen, Kimberly, whatever it is that let someone start taking animals off their plate, whether it's for their own health or for the environment, once they're consuming less animals, I've seen this so many times, their heart starts to open more to the plight of those individual animals. And even if they weren't in it for the ethical reasons originally, they start to be more open and more compassionate so far as the animals.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. And that's what we want, right? more compassion in the world means a different world.
100%.
Yeah. I can't say enough about that approach. That is just so powerful. And you know, thinking about wanting to be there for your family too, is if you really can't make it to the gym that day, like maybe you also start to incorporate activities with your family. Maybe there's something that you can do as a group, as parents and children, or any mix of those together, where if you don't make it to the gym, maybe you're running around a park or something, just enjoying each other's company and being playful and being able to still move your body and stay in those like that priority of your fitness and your health.
100%. Yeah. And I would say on a purely actionable level, so far as your exercise, I would urge people to aim for like an 80-20 ratio with their exercise. So the 80% is that stuff that you love. So it might be playing with your family or dancing or hiking or whatever it is. And the 20% is actually that most high value, impactful exercise. I would say for most people, it's lifting heavy weights. I am obviously a personal trainer and a fan of the gym, but there's the 20% that gets the 80% of the results, right? And that's the just do it type of exercise that you really see huge benefit for scheduling into your week and your most high discipline times. But the 80% is just the stuff you love. It comes easily. It's really, really fun. I think that's a good ratio for enjoying what you do and also getting awesome results.
Okay, that's really cool. What kind of exercises are you thinking when you're talking about that discipline? Like what kind of weightlifting are we talking about at the gym?
So for me, I'm a huge fan of big compound movements, your squats, your lunges, your chin-ups, your deadlifts, all these sorts of things. And I favor a style of resistance training called metabolic resistance training. So it's almost like a bit of a big circuit of opposing muscle groups. So you can go straight from one exercise to the next and they're opposing muscle groups. So you're able to get through strong movements back to back with minimal rest. You get a little bit of a cardio effect as well. You get a bit huffy puffy as well as lifting those heavy weights. And that is absolutely my preference for anyone that can get to a gym. Irrespective of age, you're never too old to lift heavy weights safely. And if you can't get to the gym, it's amazing what you can do at home just with a couple of dumbbells or a kettlebell. We all experienced this during COVID when we had to work out at home. There's so much you can do. And I'd also say, you know, don't be afraid of the gym if you haven't been there yet, and start wherever you're comfortable, even with if it's 5 minutes of body weight moves a day.
That's awesome. So I know that you have from the food perspective, you have 10 steps to making plant-based eating sustainable. Before we get to that though, and we're definitely going to talk about that, do you have anything like that around exercise?
So the 80-20 was a really, that's really important. So again, it's the 80% of the exercise that you love or could love. Things are hard when they're new, but think about if I was good at this, would I love it? Or also if you've been out of exercise for a few years, perhaps think of what you used to love as a child. That might be a good thing. What else? I would say if you're not yet in the routine, schedule exercise for your high discipline times of the day and literally schedule it, write it down, jot it down in the calendar and prioritize that. For most of us, it's first thing in the morning. Temptation bundling, that's a Kathy Milkman term. And that basically means if something is a little bit harder, it's not a habit yet, maybe combine it with something that is a really easy habit, like listening to a fabulous podcast or listening to an audiobook as you walk. That's a type of way of making it a little bit more easy until it becomes a habit. And that's probably a really good start so far as getting into a routine. Start with a really achievable amount for you, whether it's 5 minutes a day or half an hour a day, whatever seems low bar, really achievable, start there and build up as you feel comfortable.
Okay. That's great because it feels manageable. right? Mm-hmm. And so many people, especially having been away from exercise for a period of time. And I'm saying so many people, but I'm really thinking about myself. And I'm sure other people can relate. But you feel hesitant, or you keep telling yourself, like, this is important to me, but I can't get up earlier than I do. Or mm-hmm. where am I going to fit this in the time? X, Y, and Z is in the way, and I can't move any of those things. But when you say something like, start with 5 minutes, because what's going to happen, right, is we get in the habit of the 5 minutes, and then we're doing it for 5 minutes. I'm like, well, I could probably do 10 today. I've got some time. And then you start to feel good about what you're doing. And when you're consistent with those 5 minutes, then all of a sudden it does start to become a habit, doesn't it? And then you can 100%. Start to make time for it and build 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And before you know it, you're at the gym hanging out with Kate.
And it turns into a cycle that's in your favor. When you're not exercising, it's kind of a vicious cycle that isn't in your favor. When you are exercising, it's a positive cycle where you have more energy, you feel like you're coming through for you, you tend to make better food choices, you tend to sleep better. Everything's just a positive cycle that can build on itself. So absolutely, I would say start tomorrow. If not, start today.
Yeah. I'm going to take that advice, and I will set my alarm 5 minutes earlier tomorrow and do a Perfect. Little something when I first get up.
Perfect start.
Awesome. So let's talk about those 10 steps for making plant-based eating sustainable. Walk me through them.
I would love to. And I've got little actionable steps for each as well. So step number one is to, rather than one main event, you know, it used to be what's for dinner, steak or whatever it was, focus on building your meal around fibrous veg, lean plant protein or plant protein and good fats. So your protein isn't going to come from one hunk of flesh. It's probably going to come from multiple components in every single meal, and that's okay. And the actionable step I would say is start with meals you already eat that just need a little tweak to become vegan or plant-based. So maybe you're swapping out the milk or the type of protein powder that you have in your porridge or cereal in the morning. It's just a small tweak. Number two, I would say prioritize one ingredient whole foods. So they're kind of one word foods. It's oats and apples and nuts and seeds, not the processed jazz. And I would also recommend try some foods that you mightn't have loved as a child. You know, I hated Brussels sprouts as a child, and now, strangely, I love them. The action step right here is to think of your favorite plant strong protein each for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and just have fun building a meal around each of them. So maybe it's tofu turns into tofu scramble at breakfast, lentils turns into some sort of lentil stir fry or pie or whatever it might be at lunchtime, and chickpeas turns into a curry at dinner.
Yeah, good stuff.
Number three is important. It is buy quality produce. And even more important than that, give it the same marinating and cooking respect that you used to give to meat. If you just ate a raw piece of meat, that would be disgusting, almost as bad as those boiled to death Brussels we pushed around the plate as children. So marinate and season and char and whatever you need to do to your plant friends to make them absolutely delicious. I have lots of personal experience with number four, and that is don't be disappointed by a recipe flop. The number of vegan omelets I've made that are not a success, I'm going to keep trying. I've eaten some beautiful omelets out. And for if you've had some recipe flops, I would say look back to those meat meals that you had that were pretty disastrous as well. You persisted. And I recommend you do that with your plant-based meals as well. And the action step here is to find a few websites or YouTube influencers that just have some really easy, amazing, delicious looking recipes and just follow their guides. Number five, this is a really happy meal, a happy point. And this is, you might have to eat larger meals to feel satisfied.
Yeah.
Oh, bummer, right?
Right.
The thing with plant-based foods is generally they're going to have a lower caloric density. So you're not going to swap out steak for spinach and be okay. That just isn't going to cut it. So you're actually going to have the happy side effect of needing to introduce or reintroduce some of those foods that you might have been scared by. You know, I mentioned when I was first a personal trainer, I was really high protein and low carbohydrate. I was scared of lentils and potatoes and bananas and seems ridiculous now. So the happy side effect is you're going to have to eat larger meals and just enjoy it. The action step here is to make 3 high value whole food fat swaps. So think of the foods that you may be used to avoid because they were scary and full of fat, and introduce some of those high value fats like avocados and nuts and nut butters back into your meals so that they're more satisfying.
Yeah.
Number 6, find creative alternatives for those meals you used to love as a meat eater. So you don't have to miss out on anything, nothing. Everything can be vegan. And my go-to here is to put the little hashtag of whatever you're fancying in Instagram. So hashtag vegan pizza, vegan ice cream, whatever it may be, you're going to find a recipe, probably free, probably absolutely delicious. And the action step here is if you want to take it up a notch, find 3 high value whole food carb swaps, 1 each for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So that pizza mightn't be a processed carbohydrate pizza. It might be a sweet potato base or a cauliflower base. Carbs aren't bad. Whole food carbs are better than refined carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. So. Number 7 is to find plant-based protein pimps to add to any meal that might be a little bit low on the protein. So, you know, at lunchtime, I have a huge salad and it's chocker full of raw veg and roast veg and so many other things. It could be a little bit low on the protein. So I add hemp seeds to it and I often follow it with edamame, and it's just getting, I guess, really versatile and knowing what are some really simple plant-based protein pimps to add to your meals.
I love that.
Number 8, when eating out, and wow, it's so much easier to eat out than what it used to when I even first became a vegetarian. When you're eating out, scan the menu for what you might like to add to your meal if the vegan option is looking a little bit lightweight. So the vegan option might be a bit of a lightweight, boring looking salad, but you see in the menu that somewhere else they've got a side of whatever it may be, the extra avocado, the portobello mushrooms, whatever nuts look good. And I just say, can I have a bit of that or double this with my meal, just so that it's a bit more substantial. Number 9, this is really important, and it's a little bit more mindset related. The more certain you are of your food choices, the more certain your loved ones will be as well. So we teach people how to treat us. And if you're overly accommodating and people pleasing, and you always accept that food that's not aligned with your ethics and maybe even your goal, people are going to continue to offer it to you. However, the first time you disappoint someone, I'm sorry, that cauliflower cheese looks amazing, however, I'm no longer eating dairy, they're going to be a little bit put out the first time. However, they're going to learn, and long term, it's going to be better for you both, and you're going to feel a lot more congruent in your choices. Yeah. Number 10, everything counts. Move at your own pace. There's no such thing as a bad vegan or a failure. Absolutely, just move at the pace that works for you. And when you're ready, I would say seek out both the people that you admire and that you relate to. I guess they're people that you can model. For me, it was the fit, strong vegan athletes. I needed to know they exist. Mm-hmm. I hadn't recognized them until I sought them out. And then my goodness, they were there in abundance. Mm-hmm. And part B to that, I would also say, Seek out the emotional fuel that's going to fortify you for when it gets a little bit struggle street. So these might be the horrific documentaries like Earthlings and Dominion. And if you're feeling a bit wobbly with your choice, sometimes if you steel yourself, this sort of emotional fuel, wow, it's super powerful. So seek it out.
Those are really great, great tips, and absolutely could set someone up to just be on their way and stick to being vegan forever. You mentioned having salad for lunch, and I love that because so often people think that, one, that's all vegans eat and how boring, but my goodness, if you've ever seen a salad made by a meat eater next to a salad made by a vegan, you wouldn't even recognize it because we know how to make a salad. And you even touched on it a little bit. You've got some raw veg, you got some roasted veg, you throw in some edamame and like I like to throw in like potatoes and or rice or quinoa and whatever to like bulk it up. Because like you said, we get to eat so much more food and we're nourishing ourselves. We're filling us with fiber. It's really good. The textures are interesting. So many flavors. So I'm just really thankful you mentioned that.
That is such a good point. And one of the things I most like to focus on, I guess a mindset game to play with myself, is the reframe. And I used to think all salads are boring in the same way that I used to think all cardio is hateful. And that language is not very good at getting you to take the action of eating the salad or doing the cardio, right? Right. So as you've demonstrated, Kimberly, when I became vegan, I just found out how non-boring salads are. And basically anything can go in a salad. They can be as substantial and delicious as you like. So good point.
Yeah. And when you touched on those moments when, you know, someone keeps giving you food that isn't in alignment and, you know, some people will really struggle with that. I love, Dr. Doug Lyle. Are you familiar with him?
I am not. I'm going to have to look him up.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. He's a psychologist and he wrote the book with his best friend, Dr. Alan Goldhammer.
I know him.
Yeah. They wrote a book called The Pleasure Trap.
Yes.
Yeah. And so Doug Lyle talks about all of the ways that we get caught up in the, you know, salt, sugar, fat, that kind of thing. But he also touches on, what do you do when you're trying to make this change and the people around you think it's stupid? They don't understand. They don't want you to do it. It makes them uncomfortable. He said that's really effective if you don't want to get into a conversation about it is to just say, look, I went to my doctor. We discussed that I'm going to eat this way for now. It's working for me. And that it is what it is. So that can be really effective for some people. And he's got a lot of great tips on how to manage that at parties and things like that, both within the book. And if you're really looking for a good time, look up his Pleasure Trap talk, and I'll actually link it in the show notes on YouTube. It's from the 90s. The quality is terrible. He's in Hawaii. He's in a Hawaiian shirt, but he does little drawings while he talks and he cannot draw. And he calls that out. He's totally open about it, but it's such a fun conversation to listen to. And it really can help people when they're in those moments to have some backup and feel like, okay, I can actually tell this person, hey, I'm not, like you said, I'm not eating dairy right now. You know, I'm not going to eat that. Thanks, but no thanks. It looks great, but it's not for me. And you're right. Like sometimes people will be, oh, what do you mean you're not going to eat this? And then people feel guilty about offending someone, but it is only going to happen once. You know, for the most part, people aren't going to continue to push. And honestly, my thought is if they do keep pushing, maybe you stop eating with that person for a while. If there's someone who's important to you, maybe there are just other activities you can do together that don't involve them providing you food. I know it's tough if you're a kid and those are your parents and you don't have a way to fend for yourself, but you know, as an adult with adult relationships, that definitely is an option.
100%. And especially when it comes to health, you know, if you want other people to respect your food choices and your decisions, you need to respect your food choices and your decisions. And I would say I always tell my clients, you and your body are a team, and it's the only team you've got, and you're together for life, and yeah. you need to treat your body with respect. And as you hinted at, if a loved one isn't respecting your decision to look after your body and be in control of what goes in your mouth, that's not a very good place.
Right.
So absolutely, if you need to take a little break from eating with them, then maybe that's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Relationships are so complicated, aren't they?
I think most vegans find, definitely it's been my experience, that the food is the easiest part of the vegan lifestyle. 100% definitely, without doubt, managing relationships with non-vegan loved ones is absolutely the hardest part of the lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel very lucky in that my husband is vegan and my mom is vegan. So it's really just, you know, when I'm around my dad or like my brother and his family, and my dad will eat vegan food. So when it's just the four of us, like we've been able to have like a vegan Thanksgiving, that kind of stuff. When my brother's family is around, there's always animal products, or when we're with my husband's family, there's always animal products. And it's a little uncomfortable, but people know where I stand. I'm not washing any dishes. You know, where people have had, you know, animal flesh on their dishes, I'm not touching those, and they respect it. But I had to tell them, and I had to make it clear. And for me, thankfully, I had such a strong feeling, and I was willing. I've never been afraid to be like, no, this is me, and this is what I am doing. And people are just like, oh, okay. And look, some people haven't liked it, but that's kind of, you know, people come in and out of your lives, and it's okay if people leave, because you're making a change and you are honoring what matters to you and honoring, like you said, your body. And who else should make decisions about your body but you?
100%. We all need to find our own line in the sand. And for our listeners who aren't vegan or who are new vegans, the funny thing is that line in the sand changes, and it's not really within your control. When I was first vegan, I had a non-vegan boyfriend. I wouldn't be able to handle that now. It wasn't a problem at the time. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this happen with so many people as well. What you're okay with initially gradually changes, and you might become less okay with it. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You need to respect how you feel. And I guess it just takes a while to get better at communicating that effectively without judgment to your loved ones.
For sure. I was full of judgment when I was 20 years
normal.
Old.
Yeah.
Full of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
a different approach now, but just like you, you know, if for some reason my husband and I weren't together anymore, and I was looking for another relationship, I wouldn't be able to do it with somebody who wasn't vegan. And if that meant I was alone forever, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand.
Another thing that you and I talked about when we met before was, and it's kind of coming off of me thinking about being judgmental and angry, honestly, when I first discovered what I'd been participating in as a meat eater and an animal product user, from why love is more powerful than hate. I love that you put it like that. Let's talk about that. What does that mean to you?
So there's a bit of a story here. Feel free to interrupt where you need, and it does get a little bit heavy as well. However, as I shared, when I first became vegan, I was really angry that we'd been lied to, like so many people. And I carried around a lot of anger and frustration and even hate, because I felt certain that when I shared the truth with the people I love most, that they would make the change that I had instantly made, and they didn't. And I guess a little bit of background, I would always go home to see my family at Christmas time. And my mom's an amazing cook, and the way that she shares love is with her amazing cooking. And about a year or two into my vegan journey, when I'd gotten quite active as well, I was going to the animal rights activism events. I was holding up the screens with the slaughterhouse footage. I'd made lots of friends. I was very much in that animal rights phase. And mom rang me up before Christmas one year, and she said, "Katie, I'm worried about Christmas. I don't know what we're going to do about the food. Unless you want to mastermind a vegan feast and sell the family on it, I'm at a bit of a loss." And I was like, oh my goodness, 100%, I'll totally mastermind the feast. Perhaps you can sell the family on it. Anyway, fast forward, we had Christmas. I made 6 new dishes. They all worked. It was amazing. Everyone was really receptive. The food was beautiful. The next day, my mum, and again, to backtrack, I'd been trying to emotionally blackmail my parents for a couple of years by that point in time to watch what the health. You know, for my 40th birthday, I said, "I don't want any presents. I just want you guys to watch what the health." And they didn't. And anyway, back to that successful, delicious Christmas, mum the next day said to me, "Katie, will you watch what the health with me?" And so we watched it. It deeply resonated with her. She had been a nurse for 30 years, and she really understood the fact that we live in a sick care system, not a health care system. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of compassion for the impact that factory farms have on the communities surrounding them. She hadn't really made the connection to the animals yet. However, we watched the documentary. She said, "I'm going to give this plant-based thing a try for 2 weeks. A couple of years later, mum was powering on with the vegan lifestyle. She was veganizing all her previously animal-based product meals. She was becoming a little bit of an animal rights activist. We were bonding massively over that. I had so much respect for the change that she had made. She watched the most horrific documentaries, Dominion, Earthlings, watched everything. And saying all of this, Dad is the anti-vegan. She was still living with the anti-vegan. Wasn't amazing for their relationship, was amazing for our relationship. Here's the heavy part. 2 years ago, I spoke to mum on a Sunday morning like I always do. Amazing, beautiful chat. Later that day, Dad rang me to tell me that mum had died suddenly. So the person I love most in the world, my person, the only vegan in my entire family, had died very suddenly. And this is where we come to the leading with love, not hate. It would take me a further year. Obviously, I think I'll always be in grief, but I was in shock for a year. It was as horrific as anyone would imagine. I'd actually always expected that the phone call would come from mum, that it would be mum going, "Katie, it's your dad," because Dad wasn't the healthy one and didn't have the healthy mindset. However, it happened to be mum, and I was filled with so much sadness in that year that I actually didn't have the emotional capacity to carry around the daily sadness and anger and frustration at the non-vegans in my life that I had up until then. And I also thought, when I heard about mum, obviously it was the saddest thing that could ever happen. However, I had no regrets. She knew how much I loved and respected her. Our relationship couldn't have been better. If it had been my dad, I would have had regrets because our relationship wasn't amazing. And so I kind of vowed to work harder, to focus more on what we have in common rather than the fact that he's not vegan. And that's how I kind of learned that that, you know, leading with love, it's just easier. It doesn't mean that I care any less. It was kind of a survival strategy, I think, to be able to continue in a non-vegan world without my mom.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I share it because I know so many people can relate, either people that have dealt with losing the person they love most or just losing someone you love so much. But I also imagine people can relate to having a fractured relationship with someone that they do love because of the lifestyle that they're choosing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to work on. And I will say, you know, in a positive, once I started to, I guess, reach out more and be less judgy, my dad started to reciprocate. And when I flew home for the 1 year anniversary of mom dying, my father, who had never cooked me so much as a baked potato in the years that I'd been vegan, I would cook full meals for him. He wouldn't do anything for me. That day I flew home for mum's anniversary, he had cooked me an entire tofu stir fry meal. Wow. From a recipe for the first time. Oh. And he continues to do that. And I guess I want to say as well, because this came at the hardest time for me, this awareness and this choice to lead with love, not hate. However, for our listeners, if you resonate, if you're thinking, well, I get around filled with love and frustration and anger, and it is exhausting, I have a few steps. I have an A, B, C to help you take these actions, if it's okay for me to share those.
Of course, yeah.
So if you are resonating with this, listeners, the first step, the A, is an awareness, and it's thinking about where you are in your life right now and how you're feeling right now, and an awareness of what it's going to look like in 6 months, in 12 months, in 24 months, if nothing changes. If you are still focusing on everything that your loved ones are doing to cause pain and suffering, if you're still filled with hate and anger and frustration, how is life going to look? How much energy are you going to have? How will your relationships look down the track? B is really actionable. It's to brainstorm both the things you can stop doing and the things you can start doing to make a change. So I actually stopped going to those animal rights activism events. Maybe I'll go back. I just don't have the fortitude, the energy, the emotional capacity right now. Yeah. I stopped sharing the horrific videos on social. I stopped even looking at them. I stopped having those conversations where people are just in it for the debate. Mm-hmm. They don't really care. They just want to make that angry vegan angrier.
Yeah.
And I just stopped them. The things I started doing is I started following those really happy feel-good accounts, like the animal sanctuaries and the food creators that just share the deliciousness. I started sharing my delicious recipes and good news stories, and I just started doing the happy, compassionate things.
Yeah.
The C is about commitment, and this is the commitment to yourself. This is why I'm so vocal about no longer being an angry vegan. I'm making that commitment to myself because, my goodness, it's a daily practice. And also because you can bet if I share that with my friends and loved ones and I share that on social and then I have a little slip up and I become that natural little angry Kate, people are going to call me on it. They're going to hold me to that commitment, and that's to my benefit. So I hope, if you're feeling that it's time to make a little bit of a change for you, that perhaps some of these steps, some of this advice resonates to some of our listeners.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I want a vegan world. It's not going to happen overnight. And so for everyone else that is working towards that, as you say, we have to look after ourselves so that we're in it long-term, healthily, happily, and sustainably for us, for our families, and of course, for the animals.
I've noticed your quilt behind you. I love it. It's so cute. It's never too late to stop eating animals. I love that. That's the big square that I can see. Just maybe I'll take a screenshot during the recording at some point. And this way I can share that on online when I share your episode.
Do you know, I'm very not handy, and it is a quilt. And I was so proud of myself that I actually managed to hang that thing. And I'm also pretty proud that my little rescue cat, Loki, hasn't ripped it down. So go me and go Loki.
Yeah. Is Loki the photo that you shared in your email?
It is. Yes. That stunning boy is my cat.
Oh, yeah, he is. It's so wonderful to be able to share our lives. I live with 4 cats, and I feel so lucky every day that I just get to experience them and all of their catness. They all have so many different personalities. And this morning, yesterday morning, I was on a call on video, and our one giant orange cat was in here, and he got on my desk, and he's in his kind of teenage phase, right? His teenage years. So he's a little more trouble. But he's also an orange cat, which means he's going to be a little bit of trouble for his whole life. And he's chewing on everything. And I finally can like lift him, and he's on camera. And the people I'm speaking to, like, you know, we're having a professional conversation, and Teddy comes into frame, and everyone just stops, and he's the center of attention. And it brought so much joy to all of us in that moment. And so lucky. We're so lucky.
That's gorgeous.
How did Loki come to find his place with you?
It took me quite a while to be okay with the idea of having a companion cat. I was torn by the vegan aspect of it, and Loki has vegan Vickies, and he won't eat any vegan cat food, wet food, so he still has fish. That's to work on. However, vegan cultivated meat is coming, so he will get that when it's available. He's a little rescue. I saw his picture online after months of looking, and I literally fell in love at first sight. I haven't had that with a human. I had that with Loki.
I get it.
I went through interviews with 4 separate women to get the okay, which is pretty amazing that they did so much diligence. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he came to live with me a couple of years ago, actually about 5 weeks before Mum died. So pretty amazing timing that I got to have that little love bug during the toughest time of my life.
I think they know, right? I mean, all of the cats here, they came through the cat distribution system. I don't know if you've heard about that, but
I've heard, yes.
They all showed up here.
Amazing.
And none of them were microchipped. None of them had homes. There were a few other cats that we were able to trap and find homes for. But these 4, they were meant to be here. 2 came in 2019. And then in 2020, I lost my soul cat, Cookie. She'd been with me for a total of 12 years. We lived together. Aww. She was my best friend, and I still miss her every day. But now Teddy, who's come in most recently, just a few months ago, he has so much of his personality outside of Cookie. Wasn't really a troublemaker the way he is. She was feisty, but not a troublemaker. But there's so much about him that reminds me of her, that he feels like that final piece to like fill my heart again.
Aww.
I know. They're just so magical.
Agreed.
Kate, this conversation has been incredible. And I've just got one more question for you. Tell me about your favorite hummus or your favorite way to eat hummus.
I love this question. So I was resisting the urge to say that huge salad I have most lunchtimes, it's actually topped with my homemade hummus. However, that isn't my favorite way. My favorite way is great for entertaining, and it's homemade hummus topped with caramelized onion and served with a variety of sweet potato chips And that is probably my favorite way to eat hummus.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Do you have that hummus recipe to share? Or do you want to share some tips on how people can make their own hummus if you don't have it to share?
I think it's, I can share it written or I can share it verbally right now, whatever's easiest.
Yeah, sure. If I'm happy to put it in the show notes, but if you want to share some tips now, that works too.
I just use canned chickpeas, rinsed. I rub off the little skins of many of them, as many as I can. A heap of tahini. I like 4 heaped tablespoons to 1 can of chickpeas. Blend them together. Add a couple of tablespoons of lemon, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon of garlic, 1 teaspoon of cumin, and 1/2 teaspoon of coriander seed. And the secret ingredient is chilled water, 1/2 cup of chilled water. Blend that, top it with the caramelized onion, which I only make when I'm entertaining other people, and serve it with those beautiful sweet potato crisps.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, caramelizing onions is such a feat, isn't it?
It's so delicious. I could just devour it by the tablespoon or cup, but
That sounds amazing. Thank you so much, Kate. It's been so wonderful talking with you. I know that the information you've shared here is really going to be valuable to the listeners, and all the ways to contact you will be in the show notes, so they'll be able to get in touch.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for the conversation, Kimberly. I have so much appreciation for your time and for the work that you're putting out into the world. I know the podcast is a venture of the heart. So thank you so very much.
Welcome back. I could sit here and reminisce on all the amazing things Kate said, but you just listened, so you know too. But I really love Kate's comment on finding a reframe. What a difference a bit of a different perspective can make. Be sure to check the show notes for Kate's 10 steps to going plant-based without the overwhelm and her 3 tips on leading with love. To connect with Kate, visit her website at strongbodygreenplanet.com. Find her on Instagram and Facebook at strongbodygreenplanet, and check out her podcast, Healthification. Just like Did You Bring the Hummus, you can find it on your favorite podcast app. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but Kate also has a new journal out now. You can find the link for the journal as well as how to connect with Kate in the show notes. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating and leave a review. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. Be sure to share these episodes with your friends. If you're finding something good here, they will too. If you're a vegan or know a vegan who would be a great fit for the podcast, follow the Be a Guest link in the show notes. Fill out the quiz and I'll be in touch. I also have a new freebie. Well, I keep saying new, but it's not really new anymore. But anyway, it might be new to you. I have a freebie on my website. Sign up for my mailing list and get a PDF of 3 amazing vegan recipes. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.